Now we're going to have a Q&A section. So we will have Jeannie, Mark, Linda, and myself.
And hopefully not too long a dose that morning. And like I said, we're going to do a Q&A again later in the gallery and the lunch. So plenty of time for interaction, as well as with those wonderfully creative researchers. Yeah. So how do we want to do this? Are you going to, I should know this by now. Okay. Go ahead, where the mics go. Number two. Yep.
Thanks, Kitty Huberty, yeah, Morgan Katie. Stanley. Just want to understand more about the upside in analytics. 25% increase in the revenue contribution there, the revenue level at the end of the roadmap. How much of that is inorganic versus organic? What does the mix look like? Is more coming from software, and so it could be even higher margin than the 60% you laid out. And then lastly, some other companies in this space are talking about analytics being very large deal sizes and that being impacted by slow IT budgets. And so is your view more over the next 3 years you see upside, or are you actually seeing upside in the near term in that business as well? Thanks.
Okay, so let me just make first a comment on the clients and then Mark, back to the mix here. But on analytics, right, and part of why the team is taking it up, as Mark will go through, is the progress we have seen already, right? So as you've looked at that in the trajectory, and the kind of engagements, they cross the board, Katie, from the very small to get started to the very large. So we see a real mixture. And what you will tend to see in big major markets, part of the prerequisite for them to get started for a client, they got to clean up what they have. That's the large. Usually what they're talking about on large is cleanup, data migration, transformation of what they have so they can hook it together. That is typically the large. Now, the experimentation then about moving into big data, that can start small before it goes larger. And I will remind you, in the growth markets, this can often be a greenfield that they work on too. So we see sort of small and large together in the growth markets. So Mark, if you want to pick up just on, as you talked about, maybe back in context of the 20, slightly more than 20 billion, et cetera.
Yes, yes. So if you look at that content and taking up that number for analytics, I mean, as we were going through all the preparation that we do for this, I mean, we're looking at it and saying, man, we're bumping up against this, right? I mean,
you'd be asking
what are we
going to
say? We're going to hit this early, or how do we describe it? And if you just look at the metrics and the dynamics, you say, well, this is going to, we're going to hit that 16 a lot earlier than 2015. It's a lot to do with the mix of business and how compelling I think this is for our customers. Now, obviously, I'm not the customer facing part of the team here, but I do individual transformation session with a lot of our customers, and I mean 40, 50 a year. So over a 3-year period, I'm telling you, when you go through that finance 2.0 with our CFOs and the capability that analytics provide, boy, I'm telling you, you're glued to it. You're glued to it because no CFO is running around today saying, boy, I don't have enough data. We're all swimming in data. We are swimming in data. There's so much data out there. The challenge, which is also the opportunity, is how do you analyze that data and take advantage of it? To me, I honestly feel that this was a well-placed investment on our part. It is the linkage, as I articulated, between the organic investment and the acquisitive content. I picked that term quite carefully, that the organic investment is a fulcrum, because to be able to take that collection of acquisitions, as we described in our security business under Brendan, I mean, don't you think that's pretty amazing? You got 530 new customers, 47 new countries, 39 in growth markets. That's the game plan here.
Because that is a point I think people don't always reflect on, that where we excel is the enterprise view of these initiatives. Because you can hear them, and they'll be consumer and other areas. It is the enterprise view. And when you have to play an enterprise, it is not just the new greenfield. It is the connection back into those back-end traditional, sometimes people call them systems of record, because you want to actually complete a transaction. You want to do a banking transaction. You want to do something as a result of what you've done with big data. And that, to me, is why you saw this big reaction, as an example, to mobile first that the team announced last week. There were hundreds of articles written. It's because it was one of the first end-to-end enterprise view of the topic, not a consumer view of the topic. And that's true in analytics. So, okay, go number four. I'm sorry, guys.
I think I'm number four, Jenny, up here. Keith Bachman from Bank of Montreal. Mark, this is for you. You mentioned on the, one of the slides you put up, you're a little behind on the revenue curve relative to the 305 target. And one of the reasons why I think is, even after hardware's normalized, that, as you indicated, GBS and GTS are still going through a process where some of the mix is being pressured, so to speak. So my question is, how long do you think the transformation of GTS and GBS, where you're it's pressuring growth, how long does that process last? Is it for the year? Is it a couple-year process? Then have a follow-up.
Okay, very good question, very fair question. I mean, first of all, on the growth initiative, you know, as we went through 2010 and 2011, you know, we were on a constant currency basis about that 3.5 point of revenue growth view. I think to some extent there are always going to be areas that you're pressuring and working on. I think in that analysis, it was kind of a twofold set of objectives that we had. Number one is within that, we did a very good job, I think, of really managing and driving the highest quality content in our revenue base. And I think it's uniformly accepted across the management team that when we say quality, we mean really driving value. And if you're really driving value, you'll drive margin. And if you're driving margin, you'll continue to invest in that research and development capability. That was message number one, that within that content and that 2%, would we have liked that to have been larger? Sure. But within that 2%, we're driving 4%. And the highest margin content driving 95% and 495% of our profit dollars. The second element of it, I think we're quite transparent about the areas we're working on and how we're working on them. And I don't know what you get out of other investor reviews, but you know, we thought about this a lot. You know, do we want to lay out the list of everything we're working on and how we're doing it? We thought this would be a much more, transparent view of it, and we are going down that list of the work items associated with it. How long they're going to take? Well, you know, if you look at the vectors that we see, we do see those elements taking hold in a pretty big way in our base businesses, and you can really see it on the margin content. So once again, you know, if you look at commoditized servers, they just don't have the margin capability that you see in a pure systems content, because that pure systems is integration of real value add for the corporation, and you just don't see that if you're trapped in an economic equation between, you know, Intel and Microsoft. You know, you just are in a position where you can't bring as much of your value add to the table. Likewise, if you're in labor-based processing services, and you look at that economic position as just being the labor contract deliverable, without the implementation of value add asset based, you know, the phrase we use for essentially technology content, you know, you're stuck in a position where you don't want to reside. So we're moving that as well, and we've made some real fundamental changes there that are showing better growth characteristics, but also much better margins because of the value they do. So I'd return to things don't happen overnight. You know, we're pretty transparent about what we think is going really well. To our credit, I think it's covering 95% of our profit dollars. There are areas we need to work on, and we are making progress on those, but those areas are much lower margin and have less impact on the bottom line.
But you will see, and if you just hold for the afternoon, because Bridget will cover in GBS, the big transformation is into the front office and as well the globally integrated enterprise. So she'll show you how that transition's moving, and those are the two big growth areas. And as Eric will show you, in strategic outsourcing, our big growth area is those growth markets, and it is doing fantastic there. And so as they transition and do more there, and then particularly in the major markets in strategic outsourcing, you see a different profile of the kind of engagements. They respond more to mergers and acquisitions, consolidations, et cetera. But these business outcome orientation and their higher margin in global services there too. So I just, Mark and I are both in many ways saying we keep focusing, and I think as investors, you want us on the high quality dollar. That's where we're putting the focus, and that's where we want the growth. So may I overhear one? Is Tony? Yeah, go ahead, Tony.
Tony Sacconaghi from Sanford Bernstein. I have hopefully a quick one for each of Mark and Ginny. Mark, your financial model, a really important part of it is your return of cash to shareholders, principally in the form of share repurchases. You're pretty unique among technology companies in being able to use 100% of your globally generated free cash flow to return to shareholders. And so my question is, how long do you think that that ability to access 100% of your globally generated free cash without paying incremental repatriation or driving up your tax rate, how long do you think that can last?
Okay.
Maybe I'll address Ginny and then give
her
a mic.
Oh, okay.
And then, Ginny, for you.
I have time to make a long answer. Go ahead.
And then, Ginny, for you, Mark had suggested in his comments, perhaps glibly, but I'd like to press on this, that services margins he hoped could actually emulate those of Indian providers in the 20s. Is that a realistic goal for IBM over time? And perhaps you can update us on where you think you can take offshore services labor in terms of percentage of headcount and where you are today.
What was the first question? No, I'm kidding.
He preferred to answer the second.
There is nothing glib about my statement there. So. But on the position, you know, we've built a really well-tuned integrated model through 2015, you know, Tony, where we've tied everything out. So when we come to the table, you know, we've closed all those elements of flexibility and how we manage that position, how we drive our cash flow in that context, right? We have not done that work post 2015, right? We have not done that comprehensive set of work. Now, I think with headlights through 2015, that's a pretty strong statement in itself. Now, that said, however, you know, we will continue to drive, you know, a balanced model that has flexibility across many dimensions. I mean, most of these things don't just change radically. If you look at it as well, and you look at our tax rate, Tony, I mean, you know, we're kind of mid-20s. It's not like we're in the teens. I mean, if you're running around in the teens, you know, you got a different set of problems. But I think we're pretty balanced on that basis, managing the mid-20s, and we'll continue to manage it. But we have not done a comprehensive, fully tied out piece of work on that basis. But I would expect that we'd still be driving that model that utilizes flexibility across a number of different dimensions as we move forward.
Now, to Tony's second question, you know, the way we think of managing IBM, and Mark, none of this, obviously, everything we plan together, so nothing, and he would never say something as glib. And while he was, you know, he was just pulling Steve's chain over there, just as a little report card there.
I just can't resist.
Trust me,
yeah.
that they can't help each other. And so it's regular good fun. And so, but this idea is a bigger thought. I want to come back to why Tony's asking this, is that when we think of ourselves as a world leader, and if you're the world leader, you hold yourself to every benchmark you can find in the world, right? And keep using it as a reason to stretch and to change and to create your model, because, by the way, you know, the most dangerous thing of competition between companies, their business models. That is one of the most dangerous things to change is a business model. So we benchmark everything, Tony. And so we always say, okay, how do we do that? If there's somebody out there better, how do we get to that? And how do we do better than that, right? And some of that, it's not cost cutting. It could be, but it could often be model change, productivity change, and the like. And so we see and we compete with the Indian-based services firms around the world. So you do different kinds of work. Sometimes it's that legacy work you were asking about a second ago. Not always, rarely in these big analytics like you guys are going to see out here. We're in a different ballpark, which you will soon see when you see these applications. But nonetheless, those are realistic goals. We don't mean those glibly. Those are another way of saying, what do we do? What do we keep doing different? Recognizing, though, we are an integrated company between these things. So when we talk about GBS going into a high-value dollar, it is also to pull, it is with services, I mean with software, I'm sorry, software, to pull together, right, those solutions. So where they're growing strongly, it is pulling in the software. That is a good, it's a higher quality dollar, therefore. So that does enter our mind. But we take those benchmarks very seriously. And by the way, we do them beyond services, we do them beyond software, we do them in any shared service, we do them anywhere. So feel free, show us any others you have. And they're great motivators to the team. And so to your point on services, we are going to keep marching through lots of different ideas. You'll see some more this afternoon. Three, you guys got to help me a little bit. I'm sorry, I was over here at the back. Three.
Thank you. Maynard, I'm Wells Fargo. So I have a question on longer term and changing business models. When you look at cloud and you look at the shift, it's shifting obviously to private ultimately. There's a view that it'll move to public. I guess, how long do you think this will take? Are you seeing demands in emerging countries? And then if you can talk about it from two perspectives, one on the impact of the P&L as we shift, maybe taking away from some of the higher margin, big dollar revenue to smaller dollar on a per month basis and smaller margin. And then secondly, in terms of, let's start there, and then I have a follow-up on a second part of that.
Okay. Well, let's try to answer in a couple different ways. Bruno, you want to add on clients' views of cloud and what's out there, because your comment about just private, I mean, we see private, public, and hybrid. And hybrid often, too, is what'll be out there. But clearly, private has been the biggest for lots of good reasons, by the way. And we do see it around, well, I'm answering his question now, but I told him to answer it. Okay. So do you want to make a comment about clients out there? And then we'll come back to our margins and we'll come back to...
First and foremost, independent of which market you are, emerging markets or major markets, most of our clients are answering the question of how can they streamline productivity and better quality of delivery using cloud. That's a big question. And the number one answer is you have to build an infra around the private cloud of your client that will answer to not only resiliency and delivery capabilities, but mostly to security and governance. So there is a big opportunity around cloud for us as an enterprise on building the foundation for services delivery and infra provisioning for clients. That's the number one opportunity. It goes beyond public clouds, and it goes beyond the hype of managing mail and exchanging information throughout the internet. So I think that that's the number one biggest value proposition for us, and it's driving around transportation. The second one is when you build on top of this content, which is application and software solutions to provision for the end user of the client. That's a second area and horizon of opportunity and transformation. Now, when you apply these two things to our own services delivery engine, our own outsourcing business, and our own transformative application development system, you can envision that we are also going through a process of transformation by which we are using technology, you drive growth, and you move to higher value spaces. No?
Yeah, and Eric will speak to how, you know, even in outsourcing, a large amount moving into the cloud here. And remember, we're enterprise cloud. So when you speak of margins, enterprise cloud means you have to have service level agreements, you have to have a management layer on top of the cloud and how it operates. All that is margin.
All of this is high value. No? All of this is high value.
Go ahead.
But if you look at the margin characteristics, you know, when we moved from transactional businesses to services business, those were clearly different business structures, different cost levels. Was there some cannibalization of opportunity? Yes, sure there was. Was there a different financial structure and economic model that we did just cost to? Well, sure there was. But you established that longer to annuity base, and overall that was a very good thing for the IBM business equation. And I would assume as we go through it, we'll do the same thing with cloud, right? Now, a lot of the cloud content, I would also add, you know, we're working with our best clients so they can set up, you know, that internal cloud structure where we provide the hardware, the software, the services content, you know, in the highest level of security. Those are very profitable deals. So I think it'll be a transition of how we deliver that content, and you know, we'll adapt to that economic
And we're going to do a whole segment on cloud this afternoon after lunchtime. Okay? Two.
Four. Okay. Ben. Hi. It's Ben Wright. This is Barclays. Thanks. So I wanted to ask if you can simplify your levers for the 2015 roadmap into the four buckets. I wanted to ask you like what maybe the upside levers would be for each. So first, you know, you've talked about the repo for Mark at $1.35 in contribution. What would need to break right there? Linda, the 70 cents in terms of the productivity, what needs to break right to make that more? And then Mark, probably back to you, and others, but the 270 in margins, you know, if you're doing $20 billion now in analytics and that's your highest margin business, you know, it would seem like there's some upside levers to the 270. I'm not sure, but maybe you can clarify that. And then finally, top line, maybe Ginny can just say what would be an upside lever to top line if we were to just simplify it there. Just a long question, but maybe we could just take it 1, 2, 3, 4 quick.
Okay, I think I'm 1 and 3.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
On the free cash flow base, I mean, we've had pretty good performance on overall free cash flow. I mean, to me, looking at it from the broader equation, I mean, to derive $12 billion of improvement in free cash flow over a decade, that's a pretty strong statement. And I know all of you understand this. I'm not saying anything to you, you know, but as a management team, that's a flow dynamic, right? That's a flow dynamic. It's not like a position. It's not the destination. That's that flow dynamic. And we are very focused on free cash flow and all the elements of free cash flow, right from the business equation to the way we run the business to the way we allocate capital, the way we generate returns, because we know that's the fuel to drive this business equation. So is there upside? Well, you know, even if free cash flow were flat for the next 3 years, we'd have enough to complete the roadmap. That's on that kind of conservative bent. I think your second question was on the spend productivity that I'll leave for Linda, but on the overall profit contribution, you know, I think I tried to illustrate that as we went through the dynamics. I mean, I think there's certainly margin capability within each of the segments as we move to higher value content. You could see the achievement and how that focus and emphasis has generated real results. Secondly, I think we do have capability in the global integrated enterprise that I know our competition doesn't have. I know they don't have that. And then lastly, it's the overall mix across segments to, you know, the higher margin content we see in intellectual property. I'd say it more broadly than just software, intellectual property. And those growth initiatives are firmly placed to help us drive that. So it isn't at least. My purpose in that chart was really to give you what I thought was a one very credible scenario. So.
Yeah, I just on the $8 billion. First of all, you saw what we've done just in shared services alone since 2005, taking the 16.8 down to 11. And we have $81 billion to work on, and we're working on it. We have a pipeline, Ben, that we have. I mean, there are many projects underneath each of those three major segments, hundreds of projects. Some of them are testing early on. And as they get more and more legs, if you will, we put them into the roadmap of our productivity savings. And then, you know, the other thing, as I said, the analytics itself is opening up new areas for us to go, you know, find opportunities to drive continuous productivity. Talking about cloud, we have got an analytics cloud, one analytics cloud, big one, with all our data on it. We've got finance data, sales data, HR data, marketing data, IT data, you name it, it's up there. Now, most organizations will look at that data individually in their slope pipes. And we do that, but we also are looking at it this way. So if you can start to get, and we're working this with John and his team here, looking at what sort of new insights could you find that would link, you know, something from a, you know, employee skill base that would somehow link that you'd never guess at, you know, in revenue growth, for example. So, I mean, there is just a huge set of opportunities for us to go after. And we are not done. We're going to continuously drive this. So, you know, that's what we're doing.
You know, Ben, they come in with new ideas. I mean, every quarter they're in with the new ideas on that, either what's in the $8 billion, above the $8 billion, of all different ideas here. And this clock stopped, so I'm going to answer his question really fast about top line. You said, what do you think about? First point I'd make is, again, I'm going to keep saying, we're going to keep prioritizing into the high-value dollars for growth. Second thing, though, what would change? You know, fixing these underperforming businesses at rate and pace that we fix those underperforming businesses, and then the economic, you know, variables around the world. That would be my short answer to it.